Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Jeff, today's episode is going to be too sweet. I'm Tom. This is Jeff. Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
Closing out 2020, I guess we're ending with this match.
How appropriate.
Rightfully so in a lot of ways. Yeah. And so, it's been a rough 2020. This is going to be a rough match. I'm ready to shit all over it. So this should be exciting. But other than that, I'm doing well, closing out the year, stuff like that. We're doing, having a good time doing this, though. Still, we're not going anywhere. We're going to take a little bit of time off here, but that doesn't mean we're going anywhere.
Yeah. Yes. Fear not when you don't see a new episode drop on the following two Mondays. Your favorite co-hosts did not give up the podcast game. We simply like to take some time for the holidays. We like to give you a little break from the payoff so that you can spend time with your families.
On holiday, as I like to
yes,
say.
Yes, on holiday.
Right.
So fear not. We will be back in 2021 with an all new slate. And I'll tell you, we've already discussed some of the matches we're doing next year, and we've got some pretty good ones planned. It'll be Royal Rumble season. Then we're trying to find some good ones pre-WrestleMania. We'll get our Mania greatest hits in there. We'll find some new ones we haven't covered yet. Plenty still left, that's for sure. Gosh, what else happens at the beginning of the year? WCW. I think
the Rumble.
We'll get the Rumble matches. Yeah, we'll get those in there. And then, maybe we'll even find like a WCW uncensored one. I don't even remember what their January they were doing sold out, which sucked. I don't even remember what their February pay-per-view is called. And then
pretty quick here, we're going to be on the road,
I know.
Like, it feels like we were just on it, with everything zipping by. We got a, late February AEW pay-per-view too. Like, things just kind of, we'll talk about it coming up, but as fun as Mania is, like Rumble's just, it's super exciting too. So we got good stuff lined up in 2021.
I hope we have a crowd for the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, to not
looking
have
good,
that,
is it?
No, and that one, and even Mania is not looking great either, which is sad. But
believe it's going to be an entire year of no crowd?
No, it doesn't feel that way. I'm glad the Thunderdome's a thing, but it just, it doesn't feel that way. It's crazy either way.
I mean, if there's like a better way to present it than either company has done, I don't know. I mean, they've both done their best, but oh God, this product needs a crowd. This industry, it does not set up well. Like, it's weird. Have you, I'm assuming you've watched a lot of football, this fall.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Does it bother you that there's no crowd? Do you even notice or care? I don't.
In that setting, no, because of how it's like, set up, and you can't always see it, where the camera angles, so they can hide it a little bit, and that's okay for me. And then, and I'm a Michigan fan, which they're not fun to watch right now anyways, so they weren't fun to watch. I say a Lions fan too, but I'm not a fan. I grew up there, but anything better, if they could put together a better product, I'm going to check it out. But no, it really, it hasn't changed too much.
No, I mean, I watched, I was watching, and I'm not a huge NBA fan, but I watched the NBA playoffs, and yeah, they're fine without fans. Who cares? They were in a little like gym in Disney. I don't know. Yep. Games were good, whatever. Football, haven't cared one bit. Hockey was pretty interesting. It was fine without the crowd. So it's so interesting how, and again, I know wrestling is a performance, but it's just amazing how wrestling really sucks without a crowd, but yep, Nothing else matters at all. I have not enjoyed the NFL any less because there's no crowd, but wrestling is just terrible.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is, and whether we're, you know, just we're the armchair on it, and we're judging it that hard. Who knows? But either way, it's still just I don't know what we're looking for. You know, I always think that, like, we complain, and, you know, we don't always like what's happening, but I don't know what the solution is either. So I hate being that guy.
So why'd you want to cover this match?
Sorry, you caught me taking a drink there. The this was one where you and I had. You know, a long time ago, I had mapped out some of these matches to kind of see, like, we were basing it off of the timeline and kind of when that was. And so this was end of the year. It kind of fit for us to end on this one. When I was looking at it until we kind of, you know, got to last week, I didn't realize we had the crap of Sting Hogan followed by this. I say not the crap, like, that was terrible for other reasons, but this one, like, the, you know, Goldberg and Kevin Nash to kind of close out the year. Part of it was just because of, you know, the streak and, you know, what happens at the end of this match. But then for me, I remember this actually being one of the first time I had people over at my house in high school to, like, buy the pay-per-view and watch the pay-per-view with a group of friends. Like, this was the first one I remember that it was such a big deal. I'll talk about it in the build, but I remember it vividly, like, a couple people coming over. There maybe it was, you know, not even a dozen of us, but all of us watching this pay-per-view in my parents' family room.
Love it.
Yeah, it's a history, you know. You didn't know it was a Mountie Mark. I'm a Mountie Mark and a Big Boss Man Mark, and, like, this was my first kind of party, you know, group party viewing experience.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited to cover it too, more for everything that happened outside of the match. But you know, yeah. We cover the famous ones, we cover the classics, and, like we always say, we cover the infamous ones. That's how we would classify this one. So
yeah.
With all that being said, let's get to the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So if it's Starrcade, it's at the MCI Center in Washington, D.C. You know, I don't even have to look at these. I just remember where WCW seemed to always host their pay-per-views. You know, Halloween Havoc would be in Vegas, and yep. MCI Center got the Starrcade a couple years in a row. And I don't know. It just must have been easy for them. Of course, in this era, man, they were just selling out everything. So the hell difference does it make where they went, right?
Right.
So, you know, December, it's like when we covered the 97 one, December 27th. It just seems like an odd time for a pay-per-view. I mean, obviously people bought it and it was fine, but I don't know, just the holidays and stuff, you figure people would, like, forget about it or be kind of checked out. But I don't know. I guess the thought was, you know, kids are home from school and maybe more people order it. So, but, you know, that was always their tradition. I can't imagine, like, right now WWE doing, you know, and even though it's free, I still can't imagine them doing a pay-per-view that late in the year. So, especially give the boys some time off for the holidays. So, yep. Of course, this year they have plenty of time off. You know, I wonder how the wrestlers are doing with their marriages. These guys have never been at home so much in their lives.
Yeah. You hear about that. Like, that's like the old stories of, like, yeah, on the road, you know, 250 days out of the year. Like, now, like, you know, they're all based in, you know, down in Florida, where, you know, they, you know, whatever they're calling it now. It's not the performance center. But, you know, how they, like, handle it and, like, flying in and out and, like, all that other stuff. You got to wonder, like, you know, they just, some of them got just like a timeshare together and they're just all using that right now. Like, yeah, it's got to be a learning experience for some of these people.
So, packed house, 16,000 in attendance. On the commentary at the beginning of the show, Shivani would say it's the granddaddy of them all. So, you know, they're trying to build this as the, you know, biggest WCW show of the year. A couple things that are interesting, Jeff, is number one, they didn't even announce a large portion of the undercard on the Nitro leading into this pay-per-view. So they, you know, they knew what the main event was. I mean, I don't know, was the main event that great that it was a one-match show? No. And so some of this stuff they didn't even really build or acknowledge prior. You know, this is supposed to be their biggest show of the year. And, you know, I'll go through the card. I mean, it just doesn't feel like a major pay-per-view. Starts off with Billy Kidman in a three-way defeating Rey Mysterio and Juventud Guerrero. He's going to retain the Cruiserweight Championship in 15 minutes. Then it would become Billy Kidman defeating Eddie Guerrero in a singles match to again retain the Cruiserweight Championship. Norman Smiley defeating Prince Iaukea by submission. Perry Saturn defeating Ernest Miller. Brian Adams and Scott Norton, accompanied by Vincent, otherwise known as Virgil, would defeat Fit Finlay and Jerry Lynn. Conan, as your television champion, would retain against Chris Jericho. You see what I'm saying? Bischoff defeats Ric Flair in a 7-minute singles match. DDP defeats the Giant in 12 minutes. And then we have the no DQ championship match, Kevin Nash and Goldberg. Goldberg's your champion. And this match became a title match because Nash won World War III earlier in the fall to get this title opportunity. Again, it's just, there's nothing about this card that's interesting. I don't know how else to say it. At the time, the idea was that WCW is going to start doing quarterly shows on NBC. So the first one that they had lined up was competing with the February WWF pay-per-view. Never ended up happening. But yeah, they were going to do these NBC specials. I've heard Bischoff talk about it a little bit on his podcast. You know, you wonder, and again, who knows what would happen. But in 99, if they would have been doing quarterly NBC specials, you know, still having Hogan and Savage and Piper and Flair around, you know, what could they have done to maybe have kept people's interest, and would it have mattered? But to at least, you know, again, get some of those fans with some big network TV specials. Also, the Bret Hart documentary Wrestling with Shadows had just aired on A&E, so a little over a year after everything transpired. I haven't seen that in a while, but I'd like to go back and watch it. That was a really good documentary.
I'm sure you could find it somewhere, yeah.
You know, I actually think it's either on Netflix or Amazon Prime, because it'll definitely like show up for me as like a suggested. So it's definitely out there, but I wouldn't mind watching it again. You know, but I wonder like how interesting it would be now. Again, back then, you didn't see stuff like that, right? There weren't like a ton of network specials and documentaries and behind the scenes stuff. So at the time, that was a pretty, pretty wild thing. Couple other things here. They were going into 1999. Keller was speculating on if Ric Flair would be able to still go in the ring. Kevin Nash, if him being the booker would give some authority and leadership to the front office, because it really needed it. They were thinking NBC would really be able to help. Of course, that never even happened. But the speculation was NBC would really make Goldberg a true star, you know, in the eyes of the mainstream, you know, sports and media landscape. And, you know, the other thing they were asking is, you know, does Hulk Hogan have anything left in the gas tank? Because remember, he was gone at this time. And, you know, people were thinking he was kind of retired and washed up. And, you know, did he have anything left? So there's a lot of questions going into WCW 1999. And basically, as we know, it all sucked, right? And I mean, it was a steep downhill from here. So, none of the positives that we thought may happen actually happened for this company. But
yeah,
Jeff, Build, let's talk about how, of all people, Kevin Nash would put his 173-match streak on the line against Kevin Nash.
Goldberg put it on the line. Yeah.
Goldberg, sorry, yes.
No, that's all right. And so this is one, too, and I want to preface this by saying, like, you and I had picked this match, and when we're recording, even though this is kind of airing when it airs, we're recording at a point where we have not seen the Goldberg-Kevin Nash documentary on the network yet. And so I'll talk about that's actually it comes out about a couple of days after you and I are recording this one. So it'll be interesting to kind of see kind of what we hear from the people that were actually there in this one and kind of what happens. But
now, is that documentary about the streak, or is it just about this particular match? Because I wasn't sure.
I thought it was the streak.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought. So, I thought it was called The Streak, but okay.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of people interviewed for that one, if I'm not mistaken.
And I might bring it up again at a certain point, but the quote I kind of pulled from it was, and then we'll get into the build on this, but I think it's important because you touched on it a little bit too, was, you know, Kevin Nash like discrediting or saying that, oh, Goldberg thought I was the booker, but I wasn't the booker. And so, you know, there's already some of that in the air. So even as I'm kind of, you know, was doing my notes, kind of reading on this, thinking to myself, you know, Kevin Nash himself on the documentary, at least the teaser, saying that he was not the booker during this time, which who knows, like, you know, we'll never know the truth on that, but that was part of why Goldberg was saucy and kind of dropping the belt and things like that. Like, but you know, we'll see how it plays out. We'll keep talking about it, but the build on this one, so Starrcade wasn't until the very end, you know, the last couple of days of 1998, but I'm going to go all the way back to 1996, Bash at the Beach. This is where you have the formation of the NWO, having this Hogan coming out as being the third man, with Hall and Nash taking on Luger, Sting, and Randy Savage. And so, you know, revealing that, and really that, like, they carried WCW for so long, you know, through 1996 into 1997. You had Hall and Nash were, you know, the tag team champions, Hogan being a part of that as well as kind of leading the stable. But Nash was really always kind of second in command, if you will, like, you know, Hogan's Hogan. So that was going to be that. And so, and while he was never really referred to as second in command, that was just kind of, you know, the role that he took. And so, you know, had different people, you know, really them distinguishing themselves a little bit throughout this, because even though he was second command, you had Hall, Nash, you had X-Pac, you know, Sean Waltman, kind of distinguishing themselves a little bit, calling themselves the Wolf Pack throughout 1997. And so, and this is where you started to see some of the cracks form. And so, really Hogan and Nash kind of battling each other. You know, Randy Savage being involved too. And so, you know, what happened to this was, like, during the match, it was actually, there was a WCW World Heavyweight Championship match, you know, Nash interfering, helping Savage, he jackknife Hogan. And really that's what broke up the NWO into the two factions, which we'll cover that at a different point. I had kind of forgotten exactly what broke them up. And so that'd be a good story for us to tell and kind of talk about that payoff. And so, but, you know, Hogan's still retained because Bret Hart had actually been involved too during that match. But the bigger angle, you know, the point of the match was that, the, you know, NWO breaking up. And so you had Nash, really the leader of NWO Wolfpack, you know, too sweet. You had Savage as part of that, Kurt Hennig, Conan. You had Conan actually going over to the NWO Hollywood not too long after that. Just a lot of different battles. You know, you had Sting, you know, the Giant, who had actually rejoined the NWO. You know, Hall actually turning on Nash during part of this. You know, just, and they were, you know, tag team champ, you know, just, you know, a lot of infighting. And this was really the big story. I say the big story, this was the main storyline during this time. Like, that's what I remember. Like, you know, we've heard the stories of the undercard kind of cruiserweights just kind of getting shit on and, you know, not getting the spots that they should have gotten. Even like DDP and the Giant, you know, when we get to this card, like, it's not, you know, okay, whatever. You know, it's nothing that I'm getting super excited about. And so, but keeping moving forward here, a little fast story of Halloween Havoc 1998, just a few months before this, you had Hall and Nash actually having a match themselves, which Nash actually, I say he quote, beat Hall, but instead of pinning him, he left the ring and then ended up losing via count out. And so he jackknifed him, is of course his move, the jackknife powerbomb, but then left and it didn't cover him. And so, you know, and kind of moving forward, you know, then we start to see the build for this match a little bit more. So rewind though, let's look at the other competitor in this one, Goldberg. And so Nash had of course been very busy, but Goldberg, his debut was September 22nd, 1997. He beat Hugh Morris, who I had forgotten about that. That was his kind of first win at that point. Now,
I'm embarrassed to tell you how many years it took me to realize that was a play on words.
Yes, exactly. So, so you've got that, and it makes me wonder about some of these other wrestlers now.
Justin, but Incredible.
Just Incredible. Yep. Of course. So
Hugh G. Rection.
Yes, of course. My favorite, my prank name was always, Mike Oxlong. So, yeah, There it is. So, anyway, so you've got Goldberg, you know, he was the, the U.S. heavyweight championship in WCW, of course, slowly, you know, working his way into the title picture, against the NWO, Hogan having the belt, or against the NWO, Hogan having the belt, and then the two of them, you know, having a match. And so, as crazy as this was, it was actually at the Georgia Dome on a Nitro, over 40,000 in attendance, where Hogan, he first wanted Goldberg, in order for Goldberg to take on Hogan, he first had to beat Scott Hall. So he beat Scott Hall, but then he also beat Hogan that night. And so he ended up vacating, but I had forgot, like, this is a Nitro where you got Goldberg kind of, you know, winning in front of 40,000 at the Georgia Dome. So, just kind of crazy, but, you know, so he's got the World Heavyweight Championship. He ended up, winning like a battle royal as well too. This is the Road Wild 1998. And so, you know, throughout the summer, really just a dominant force. And that's what I remember, you know, Goldberg, and I've shit on him on this show before, but this was the time where I say he was in this, for me, in the prime of, like, he was unbeatable. Like, that was it. Like, you know, he took on the entire NWO and I was looking at it was only a 7-minute match, but he beat Goldberg. He beat Conan, he beat Kurt Hennig, he beat Sting, Scott Norton, Lex Luger, and the Giant. And so, which Kevin Nash was in there too, but he ended up fighting Scott Hall, so it wasn't a thing. But so, either way, throughout this too, you had DDP was the number one contender, which, you know, they had a little bit of a feud. You know, that, yeah, Halloween Havoc, actually, like, going back to, so that kind of, we're starting to catch up now with all these other ones. Goldberg beating DDP, retaining the title. Goldberg's actually said that that was his favorite match of his career, was that match against Page. That's another one we'll kind of keep on our list. And yeah. So, and so this is one too, like you said, now this World War III, this was November 1998, and this is when I wish we could cover this, but we would be here for 4 hours and we're not going to do that to everybody. But this was the, you know, he was the 60 man, 3-ring battle royal, like, just, you know, we've just gotten like war games, like World War was just, it ramped way up. And so, but the winner of that World War III got a title shot against the World Heavyweight Champion at Starrcade. So a little bit of storyline building there, which I, you know, I'm all for that, of course. And so you get that, but Nash, literally, like, clearing the ring, he gave the big boot to Lex Luger, who actually had Scott Hall in a torture rack, which put them over the top rope and gave him the title, a shot at the next pay-per-view, which, of course, Starrcade. So, you know, so just, I say the build was from a, you know, while they still didn't feud a whole lot, from a kind of, like, you know, where it came from, it did make sense. Like, you had, you know, very clear cut number one contender here of what was happening. You had just the absolute dominant force in, you know, Goldberg kind of getting there, and then, you know, storylines path, you know, crossing a little bit, but Goldberg really feuding with some of these other guys throughout this. And so, and then we get to this point with Nash and Goldberg, Starrcade 98. So, Tom, your thoughts?
Well, let's get into it. You know, it's interesting as you're sharing that. What I'm thinking about is how, you know, they really, in this era, this like 96 to 2000, right? This WCW 4-year era, they just never really built any stars, right? I mean, Nash and Hall came in. Okay, you have them. Hogan, he was already a made man. Sting was already a star. Savage, Luger. I mean, these guys were already around. I guess DDP kind of got on the radar. You know, but it's just there weren't new guys coming in. There weren't fresh blood. There was like this hierarchy in WCW that nobody ever really broke through, right?
Right. And you got to wonder, like, how much of that was who was booking. Like, but
oh yeah,
absolutely, I'm with you.
But so, it just you know, everyone just kind of what was where they were. I don't know. It's terrible.
Yeah,
so
makes sense.
All right. Okay. Well, we are at the 2-hour and 32-minute mark on the dot of Starrcade 98. Again, that's the 2-hour 32-minute mark, Starrcade 98. Jeff, you ready?
Who's next? I'm ready. Let's do
all
this.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right, dude. Got them both in the ring, talking a little shit. Not often you see someone bigger than Goldberg against him, huh?
Right, yeah, locking up right away. So I don't think I've asked you this directly before, but what is your, I know you've got a lot of, you know, your ECW memories, and of course, both of us like WWE, WWF, we can talk about on a different show, but what is like your, you know, standout WCW moment that you kind of remember over like everything else? Because like, this is for me, this was it. Like when I, like, you know, crazy storylines aside, we'll talk about that in the aftermath. But when it comes to like what I remember as being kind of, not necessarily the best moment in WCW, but the moment that I remember above everything else, this is the one that comes to mind for me. What about you?
Well, it's Hogan turning heel at the Bash. That's the one. You know, I was watching it live and I was just completely shocked. So that was always the biggest one for me. Second biggest moment is Goldberg winning the title. You know, I guess what, 6 months prior to this, 5 months prior to this, in the Georgia Dome. So those are always the two that stick out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, and this is, I feel like so much of this, like right in this moment was really the heyday, you know, this was, I don't think, you know, it was, I don't think we couldn't have expected the program to go in the way it did and go downhill like it did. And so, because like, if you had kind of shown someone like, even like, you know, Goldberg in the lead up to this, like it's hard to say like this wasn't a great superior product in a lot of ways.
Did Goldberg still have a lot of steam at this point? I mean, was the bloom off the rose at all, or was he still super over at this point?
And I'll talk about this a little bit after, the cracks had started to form from what I kind of remember, and from like, especially like the quote unquote experts and what they were seeing. And a lot of that hinged, and I'll talk about this a lot after, a lot of it hinged on just how legitimate the streak was. And so because the kind of embellishment of it, like people knew that he wasn't, you know, he didn't have the record that, you know, they made it seem like he did.
That's a good point. Cause I mean, people aren't stupid. They know when WCW did house shows, right? Like how could you really make up, you know, anything at that point?
Right. And so, because it was 173-0, like that's where he was at this match. And so, and you know, I can even get into this
now. But everyone knew it was bullshit.
And so, you know, and I have it here of, I'll get into it more after, but yeah. And so, but everyone knew that that number was probably way lower, anywhere from like 120 to 150. It definitely wasn't 173. And I got a couple quotes that are actually kind of funny.
What's the difference? Why even, like, why don't you say what the number was? What's the difference if it's 125 or 173, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And so, right, it's still undefeated. And so, and Goldberg kind of working hard a little bit here. Like we've always said, and we've known, like kind of limited part of it, you know, one of the things I read, he was limited because he had such short matches.
Wasn't expecting Nash to go for an arm bar there.
Yeah. Throw that giant leg. There's an ankle lock from Goldberg, but yeah, Goldberg's matches weren't great. He wasn't a good in-ring worker because he didn't have long matches. And I'm thinking to myself, like, no, like I do not agree with that at all. Like, I just think he wasn't a good worker. Terrible knee strike right there.
Oh, it's horrible. Like,
it wasn't a good worker because he just wasn't a good worker.
Yeah.
Like, and I shit on Goldberg a lot around here. Like, yeah, his streak, you know, the streak, whatever the true number may have been, like, yeah, he's a big guy and he's strong and he can do a lot of things, but in regards to like being like a true wrestler, it's just not there for me.
You know, this is one of the, this match is terrible. I mean, this is really bad. And again, this is the main event of your biggest show. Like, yeah. Just go out and beat the shit out of each other. Like, do something. I mean, everyone's just sitting on their hands.
Right. Very slow, very, very kind of plodding. Just like, you know, I don't even want to call it strong style. These guys are just like stiff, you know, punches and kicks, but that's it. And trying to make Goldberg seem, you know, defeatable, I guess.
I noticed Bret Hart. I think he was on the show for like an interview, but not a match.
Yeah. At the beginning. Yeah.
I saw that. How unmemorable was his WCW run?
Yeah. You almost feel bad. Like,
you do feel bad.
And I always think back to the Jim Cornette, like saying like, no, Brett was in on it. Like,
Hall said that too.
Yeah. And you know what, if there's one conspiracy I choose to believe in 2020, it's going to be that, you know, the Bret Hart, you know, knowing that, you know, knowing what was going to happen and getting worked that way. And so all of them working us. Yeah.
Nash just hits him with a low blow. Ref saw it, but I guess it's legal. I don't know.
And this was after a Goldberg spear as well, too.
He's going for the jackhammer. Close to the crowd, and he was going to take the challenger up into the air with a jackhammer. Quick sound check on the audience. Nothing, dude. If I ask you what you think the best match in Kevin Nash's career is, you got anything for me? Has anything come to mind?
And well, we've got one lined up potentially from his WWF days in 2021. Nothing that Kevin Nash does stands out to me. I think we could barely pick him. Oh, yeah, he got him up there, but he struggled a little bit. I know, like, it's weird as it is, like, the only connection I kind of have to Kevin Nash is one, my mom really liked him when I was growing up because he actually is a Detroit, like, you know, grew up outside of Detroit. He went to school, like, you know, very close to where I grew up, like, used to work in the same city where he went to high school. Granted, it was years before me, but, you know, so it kind of had that weird kind of Southeast Michigan connection. But no, nothing like he had moments, of course, like, you know, the showing up on WCW, the kind of breaking up with NWO, but I like a great match. Nothing jumps out at me.
The only two people that got matches out of him were Brett and Sean. You know, there were, I mean, Sean got a couple of matches out of him. Brett got a couple of matches out of him, but that's about it.
And Twitter, let us know I'm sure we're forgetting. Like, let us know your favorite Kevin Nash matches. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, for me, it would have been his final WWF match, which was against Shawn Michaels, that no holds barred match. I mean, that was decent. Good friends,
you know. Like good.
Yeah.
But no, the click moment, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was just moments. It wasn't really, you know.
It's tough. I mean, it's tough.
Product. Yeah, absolutely. So
in this match, I mean, this is just not a good match, man. And the crowd is just not feeling it.
And plotting. And so they're really trying to put Nash over as like being a force. Like I said, I don't understand, like, you know, and in my heyday, like, you know, back when I was, you know, watching, you know, recording one of the shows, you know, WCW, watching Raw, and then the next day watching Nitro, like, you know, like this was it. Like, oh, and that was a terrible fucking
show. I know.
Like,
yeah, I know it's 22 years ago, but how bad are Nash's pants? The tassels? I mean, come on.
The tassels, yeah. Well, how bad is Goldberg selling? You know, it's just ridiculous. And I get it. He doesn't ever sell, or it's very rare. So now Nash now going for a suplex, but getting reversed. Yeah.
I mean, you would have just been better off spear, jackhammer, squash, and get out of here.
Well, that was like when he beat Brock, like, you know, both times.
Yeah, I just watched that the other day. I have no idea why. I was just screwing around the network, and I put that on. It was awesome.
Because it was legitimately shocking.
Oh, and, I had no idea. I couldn't believe it.
But it made sense. And there's a super kick from Goldberg. Yeah, but it made sense, as crazy as it was. It tied together from years ago, and they did a good job of putting it over of like, oh, this will never happen. You
know? Oh no, I thought they did. I thought they did a great job with that. I thought it was
right, exactly. And so,
and there's no problem with it being a short match. I mean, hell, it's the end of a, you know, 4-hour pay-per-view. It's not like people are looking for a 30-minute match.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, and we talk about, like, you know, how Brock's used and things like that. But it's like, again, memorable moments, like when Heyman came out and they opened WrestleMania with his match. Yeah. Like, totally unexpected. And like, yeah.
Who was
like,
his opponent for that one? Do you remember?
Is it Seth?
Maybe, yeah. I don't remember.
Oh, here we go. So we got a little.
Okay, here we go. Interference.
Little interference. Disco Inferno.
Disco Inferno.
In the Wolfpack red and black, interfering with the match. But now all the fans are on their feet. Here comes Bam Bam Bigelow now. well, we're barely selling that.
Like, so, oh, that's right. It was no disqualification. I forgot about that. They did say that before the match.
And so Goldberg now
is Bam Bam in the NWO.
I don't know, but he will get involved in the, and here it comes. And the taser, the cattle prod, excuse me, from Scott Hall in the event staff shirt as Bam Bam is being, you know, distracting the ref. And here we go. The fans all on their feet because they realize what's happening. Kevin Nash getting him set up.
I do love his power bomb.
Yeah.
The streak is over.
And the fans super excited. Dirty. The Outsiders.
So was Nash a heel or were the Wolfpack good guys at this point? Like, were they both good guys? I don't understand.
I don't.
That was part of WCW's problem. I understand not everyone's like, you know, good versus evil, baby face heel. I get all that. But it's like, this is hard to follow. Like, who am I supposed to cheer for, right? Like, is Nash a heel or not? Like, I don't know. That was one of the issues WCW is they had too many tweeners.
And Goldberg's still selling the cattle.
So Nash acting like he didn't know. Oh, God.
Okay. All right.
All right. Hurry. Let's get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right. Initial thoughts?
It just, like, the match itself was worse than I remembered.
Way worse.
Now we're watching right now, and Scott Hall now, the camera on him, and they're showing, it's funny too, because he just showed the taped end of the cattle prod so that Goldberg couldn't actually be hurt by it, and like the flashing on it.
I do love his jackknife though. How good is that? It was always my favorite power bomb ever is Kevin Nash's. I will give him that.
That was good. And I always liked the, who was it? Kevin Owens' pop-up powerbomb was always good too. But this is one where the match was worse than I remembered, and the finish, well, it's just, it's what it was. You know, I don't know what to say. How about you? Thoughts?
It was certainly 100% worse than I expected. I mean, that match sucked. The crowd was dead until the very end. I guess we can talk about it now. Not that I think anyone was surprised by the ending, but you gotta find someone better to end the streak than that. I mean, the match sucked, but like, dude, you're telling me there wasn't anyone better that could have gotten the rub that would have been better? You'll get into the aftermath, but it's not like this led to like some long run for Nash or something that made him a star. So, man, I gotta think there was someone better. And God, they were missing so much talent. I mean, Sting wasn't on that show. Luger wasn't on that show. Hogan wasn't on that show. Savage wasn't on that show. Piper wasn't on that show. And I'm sure there was, but I'm just like, man, just crazy. So, it sucked.
So what do we got going on here? You know, of course, you know, 173-0, and then after 174 days as the champ, he loses the title to Kevin Nash after Scott Hall, who was disguised as a ringside security guard, made a run in and shocked Goldberg with the taser. So now we talked a little bit about the record here. So, you know, from between 97, 98, it really, you know, it was all over the board, but the kind of write up that I found on this one, it says, and this was like someone took Pro Fight Database's numbers and kind of figured out what to hear. So,
okay.
Has Goldberg total WCW record listed as 213 wins, 24 losses, 11 draws, from his first bout in 97 to his last WCW match in 2001. Prior to Goldberg's loss to Nash at Starrcade, though, there are only 99 victories listed after his official debut on Nitro. That number might be on the low side. Some fan counts have Goldberg's landing closer to 120-0 or 150-0. But we all know that, according to WCW payroll documents that were public that were publicly released, Goldberg only worked a total of 159 dates over the course of 1997 to 1998. He was paid a total of $627,000 and change during that span, if you're wondering, or $3.6 million less than WCW paid Hulk Hogan.
Wow.
So, and then, you know, this was a write-up from Fox Sports that said, quote, "No one really knows what Goldberg's actual record was, but it's generally accepted that 173-0 is an inflated number. Some of Goldberg's industry peers have stated that the figure was exaggerated. His then WCW colleague Chris Jericho stated, 1 week he'd be 42-0, and 7 days later he'd be 58-0. Did stepping on bugs count?" And then Jimmy Hart had said, you know, who also worked with Goldberg and WCW, regarding the level of embellishment is kind of funny, as he quoted it. While The Miz said the number would go on and on and on to where it was like, wait a second, how did he get so many wins in a short time? And so, as we said a little bit here, the exaggeration damaged the streak's credibility among the WCW audience. Upon noticing that the figure had been falsified, fans began to draw homemade signs trumpeting, or began to stop bringing signs that were trumpeting Goldberg's record. So, just weird. But what do we have happening after this, though? Of course, this was the, after this, the next night, you had, it was supposed to be a rematch, actually, with Kevin Nash and Goldberg. But Goldberg was actually arrested because he was part of the storyline. He was stalking Miss Elizabeth. And so I had forgotten about that piece of this. But you had that. And so instead, he faced Hollywood Hogan, who he had returned after a little bit, because I had forgotten this, too. But he was going to run for the president of the United States, which back then, that was a joke. Nowadays, not less of a joke, less funny. But you had him offering to wrestle Nash in place of Goldberg. This one, and we will definitely talk about this on another day after you and I have covered a bunch of good matches and we need a real shit match to talk about. This was then the infamous, I say match, it was the finger poke of doom.
Yep.
And so, which then led to the reunion of the New World Order. And this is when briefly, because he doesn't need a whole lot more, Hogan just poked Nash on the chest in the middle of the ring. Nash fell down. Everyone was confused, but Hogan pinned Nash 1-2-3 to become the world champ after returning. So talk about just, well, we'll get there. But so you have that. And then really after this, though, you had Goldberg then going on to feud with Scott Hall because of the interference in the match. They actually had a ladder match. It sold out. There was a stun gun on a pole. And so, it's above the ring on this one, though, but close enough. And so having to climb the ladder and get one, he won that one. But then he also, after he won that match, Bam Bam Bigelow came out and attacked Goldberg. So then he had a feud with Goldberg, which that led to a match between the two of them. It was actually Super Brawl 9, which was in late February that next year, 1999, where the two of them had a match, and that was the end of their feud. And so I just, yeah. That's it. So thoughts on the aftermath before we get into it, because I got things to say. I know you got things to say, but thoughts on the aftermath itself.
It's just terrible. I mean, look, there had to be someone better to end the streak. There had to have been a better angle and build and way to go about doing it. Okay.
Yeah.
And if you thought he had started to get a little bit stale, what I may have suggested is turn him heel.
Yeah.
And you probably could have gotten 3 to 6 more months out of him being a badass heel. It's like, if you think the babyface thing kind of wore and fans were getting sick of him, again, turn him heel, put him in the NWO, just make him a heel, whatever. And then, you know, if you wanted a baby face to win it, then you get Sting to win it. Then you get Bret Hart to beat him, Flair, whoever. But there, either way, you could have done it. So you're almost hard pressed to think of a dumber way through a dumber opponent to do this thing. And it's not like they had anything lined up either. So everything about this absolutely sucked. Let's give our payoff scores.
So, well, we got the reviews on this one. Yeah, of course. And so I'll start with Goldberg was number 2 on the PWI in 1998. Nash was 39. The PW Torch write-up on this one said, the match had a big deal feel to it, which is significant since it's the first WCW pay-per-view main event singles match without Hogan or Ric Flair involved in a long, long time. Goldberg is coming along as a worker. 2¾ stars.
What?
And I kind of pulled up, and I've got it so you and I can both see it, like who the last few main events were on this one. And even like, the first WCW behavior event without Hogan or Ric Flair in a long time. Literally, the card before this was DDP and Bret Hart. That was World War III was the main event, unless you consider the actual World War match. Halloween Havoc before that, it was Goldberg and DDP. Yep. And then, like, you've got, like, there was some, like, NWO, you know, Team WCW versus NWO. There was the DDP, Jay Leno, Bischoff, Hogan fight. But then, you know, and some of that, Karl Malone. But you also had Sting and the Giant. You had, like, Sting and the Giant on the outside. So, like, we'll talk about that one. But that one does not stack up at all. Now,
it's just crazy how quickly this whole thing ran out of steam. I mean, you know, it's July. Georgia Dome packed, place going nuts, huge title win, and then 5 months later, they ran out of opponents, they ran out of steam, they ran out of everything. Again, even if you got to that point, I would have turned them heel and gotten another 6 months out of this title reign.
Yeah. So, and then the PW Torch on this one, or excuse me, the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Kevin Nash pinned Bill Goldberg to win the WCW title in 11/20. They announced Goldberg's record at 173-0, despite just 2 weeks earlier him having a no contest draw on Nitro for the whole world to see. I guess they had just figured everyone was watching Raw that quarter hour, and it just feels like a tree falls in an empty forest. Did it really make any noise? Did it make any noise mentality? So if nobody buys one of these shows, do they really have all those ref bump finishes? Goldberg got way more cheers than Nash, but there was a visible and notable anti-Goldberg segment as well. There were chanting Goldberg sucks early, but quickly drowned out. Then really loud Nash sucks. The crowd intensity was equivalent to being the biggest match of the year. They did a UFC spot where Goldberg was pounding from the mount, and Nash caught an armbar, a really lame-looking armbar, but still from Nash, it was cool. In the end here, it said Hall ran in and zapped Goldberg with a cattle prod, which Nash didn't see. Nash then jackknifed Goldberg to win the title. There was a big initial pop for seeing the title change, but after the show and off the air, and Luger and Conan were in the ring for the celebration, the crowd was 60% booze. Also, 2¾ stars. So everybody, 2¾, 2¾.
How? What? I mean, I'm being serious. How is what we just watched 2+ stars? I mean, it was a terrible, almost slow, plodding, sloppy match with a garbage shit ending that basically was the beginning of the end. It's when WCW jumped the shark. So look, I'll give my payoff score. This thing's it's a fucking 2, okay? 2 out of 10 is my payoff score. Match, terrible. Build, nothing special. Nothing that, you know, oh, what a great feud. This is going to be an awesome match. What a dream match, okay? So nothing there. The actual match sucked. The booking was terrible. And then the aftermath with the finger poke of doom and, you know, them ruining Goldberg and, I mean, killing the NW angle completely. I mean, just awful. Awful, awful stuff. And it shows you how stupid these guys are when they're giving these 2¼ stars. Oh, wasn't that bad? See, now, if you ask Meltzer about this match, he'd tell you it was horrible. He'd tell you it killed WCW. He'd tell you that Bischoff was an idiot and Nash was an idiot. But at the time, Jeff, what did he say? Oh, it's not that bad. Now with 2020 hindsight, the expert will tell you how bad the match was, how it ruined WCW. What a fucking idiot.
So I pulled up the other stars on this match, and that the opening Billy Kidman, Juventud Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, that one got 4.5 stars. The follow-up to that one, is that 4.5? I can't even see it. That's so small. That could actually be I don't know. Anyways, it's so tiny on my screen right now. That is, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4.5. Yes. So then the Billy Kidman, Eddie Guerrero match, that's 3.5 stars. So they rank those opening matches higher than this one. For whatever reason, though, and this kind of speaks to what you said, the Eric Bischoff Ric Flair match got 2 stars. The Kevin Nash Goldberg match got 2.75 stars.
Yeah.
So that's where you're ranking that. And there was a few duds on this one, but. Like, yeah, and I'm with you. I'm going to give it a 2.5, only a half a point because it's just memorable. But now that I've actually gone back and watched it, I'm like, oh, boy. Now, yeah, you and I, how we watch these matches, we keep the sound muted, so there was a lot happening. But there's also some stuff that happened kind of after, like off air. Now, I got a list here, too, that I had pulled up. I was ready for this even, you know, before you had kind of brought it up of who ends it. And I'm just going to name you some names here of who they thought should have ended the streak, and we'll see how you felt. So one was Billy Kidman was on this list, which yep. And so Scott Steiner is on the list.
Okay. Maybe. I look, Scott Steiner would have been better than Kevin Nash.
Chris Jericho.
That would have been great.
You've got, and then this was the kind of outside the box. They said nobody. Like,
well, go ahead. No, I get it. I was going to say, because you look at that card. I mean, again, not everyone was there. It's not like you had to end it in December like Goldberg was leaving. So that's what I said. If no one naturally makes sense for them to do that with, then don't take the title off him, because it meant something to beat him. So again, you could have turned him heel and then had Kidman beat him, kind of like your Eddie Guerrero over Brock Lesnar moment.
And so, and this says that people still loved and believed in Goldberg. Maybe take a wait and see approach and pick someone debuting or defecting and go from there. However, with WCW not in great shape, who knows how long it would have lasted. We're running the quote, what if chances WCW goes out of business or is bought out by the WWE with Goldberg's streak intact and getting no conclusion from it. While I compute the aftermath scenarios for the scenario, I see Triple H ending the streak, which no one wants. So, you know, interesting. Yeah, just end it. So
what they're talking about, if WWF was to buy WCW even back then?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that was ever a thought, or that was even under consideration. But even if that's the case, even if they did buy it out, and even if Goldberg's contract with Time Warner didn't transfer, eventually they'd get him in the ring for, you know what I mean? There'd be a ton of money in him coming back 2 years later and going, hey, no one's ever beaten me.
Yep. So I've worked in reverse order here. So the number 2 on this list is Booker T. And so Booker, because he was a big deal with it. And then the number 1 here, I'll just read it, the ultimate underdog pulling an upset and being the man to end the streak of the unstoppable machine that Goldberg would have been a moment for the ages. This man is Rey Mysterio.
I love it. Right? You turn Goldberg heel and let Mysterio win in just some crazy ass match. That would have been massive.
And it said Mysterio went on and became arguably the biggest star WCW missed the boat on. Unbelievable to see Rey accomplish all he did in WWE while he was never really getting the superstar shine of what they had under their nose in WCW. For a substantial time frame in WCW, Rey was the must-see, any was a must-see as any wrestler in the world, and can consistently performed up to par when he was even forced to foolishly unmask and wrestle without it. Which, okay. And thank you to 411 Mania. But yeah, you know, but that, you know, proves, and I think, you know, and you and I, who knows, we may have different opinions after we catch the documentary, you know, after, you know, this episode's airs on the network. You know, it's hard for me to not think, well, Nash might say, well, no, I didn't book it. Like, Hogan did. Maybe he's got some plausible deniability there, but if it pleases the court, can we please see Mr. Hogan? You know, so I gotta wonder about that too, and just it being a part of that. So you got a 2, I got a 2.5. That's kind of where we sit. That's kind of what it is. I think that's probably fair from what we saw out of that match.
Yep, it's very fair.
Yeah, final thoughts.
Let's end this. Hey, you know what? I don't know what I'm in a bigger hurry to do. End discussing this match or end 2020.
One thing I forgot, actually, that I have in my very last notes on here before I got there. So that next night, Nitro, after this show, this was the Tony Schiavone on orders from Eric Bischoff telling people to turn the channel. And this is the famous, like, you know, him saying, like, this is when Mick Foley.
I had that. That's so funny. I had that in my notes. We didn't even get a chance to talk about it.
We didn't even talk about that.
I said, because I love comparing what's going on in the other shows. So you have this garbage, and then over in the other show is that incredible Mankind wins the title over the Rock, incredible killer moment, which may, you know, which makes me think, like, why not try something like Mysterio winning the title, right? Like, I mean, obviously both companies were you know, throwing the kitchen sink at things. One of them just was doing a much better job than the other.
And this was a quick refresher for everybody, of course. Raw's War was taped at this time, almost like a week ahead of time. And so WCW knew, like, that Mick Foley was going to, you know, was going to beat The Rock. And the exact quote from Bischoff was, "Fans, as Hollywood Hogan walks away and you look at this 40,000 plus on hand, if you're even thinking about changing the channel to our competition, fans, do not, because we understand that Mick Foley, who wrestled here one time as Cactus Jack, is going to win their world title. Ha, that's going to put some butts in the seats." And then the ratings dials, and they have this because now we can go back and it's funny, you know, that we can see this. Like, really, like, as soon as that happened, the ratings can see that over 500,000 viewers changed the channel from Nitro to Raw to see that. Like, can you imagine nowadays, like, 500,000, like, you know, it'd be a, you know, an avalanche. Like, it'd be incredible. And so, that thinking that that was going to work to keep them here. And then, of course, then, you know, part of the funny part of this, I was then reading, like, you know, there was then fans in the crowd, like, in the weeks after that said, like, Mick Foley put my butt in the seat.
Yeah.
Like, and so, yeah, so that, you and I didn't even talk about that a whole lot, but that was, you know, and this is where Raw, they really dominating in the ratings battle at this point of, yeah, having that. But that's just that little note. Yep, I'll end that with their end on that for everybody of remembering that that moment, because I do remember that happening.
So crazy. Good.
So we got that. We just did 45 minutes on this crappy WCW thing and then ended on WWF having a high note. So you know what? That's a great way to fucking end 2020.
It sure is. So everyone have a great holiday season, a great New Year's. Thank you for listening to The Payoff. We appreciate your listenership and make it a great rest of the year. And we will see you in 2021 for more of The Payoff.